speaking with Senator Jeff Wilson. Thanks for being on the show.
Well, thank you, Johnny, for having me today. I sure appreciate it.
Now, we have the legislative session in session right now, and according to some of the headlines, just driving me insane. What do you want to talk about first?
Well, I want to talk about, the real gift to the return of the way that we're supposed to be, which this session is the first time in 3 years that I've served this beautiful 19th district, we're in person. I mean, we're back to an open government. We're back to where people can come and go from buildings and engage each other and converse, debate, compromise, all those wonderful things that you get simply by not being under the, you know, the directives of mandates or whatnot as a result of the COVID. So congratulations. We are now open and back to doing business as intended here in Olympia.
You know, I see that the bill reforming the governor's emergency powers appears to be dead this session. There's no compromise going on. At least it doesn't appear to be.
Well, absolutely right. From all appearances, it seems that the new Senate Bill 5063, which was done by another Senator Wilson, I'm a co-sponsor, to reform the gubernatorial emergency powers and address when an emergency can in fact be ended. Now, it does appear that that bill has been, the brakes have been applied, but not permanently. And that's one of the ambiances, I guess, of being in Olympia, is that sometimes bills may not die. And I believe that there is hope. I will push for hope. In fact, Johnny, it's my job. I'm supposed to push for hope. I'm the ranking member of state government and elections, and it is my job to try to influence and for whatever means I have to get this bill heard in committee. And it's often said, okay, if you don't like the bill, at least get it in front of a hearing and have it die of natural political causes versus the lack of even getting it the opportunity it deserves to be heard.
Right. And it seems like last session there was a lot of that. They just didn't hear a lot of, or many of the important bills. I guess that's kind of subjective, my opinion.
You know, and that's a track record not to be proud of. Now, for everything, we have a process, of course, and rules and conditions. And in this case, during committees, the chairperson is, in fact, the leader. They make, ultimately, get the decision-making power. I'm ranking, so I have influence and I apply myself to make the plea for this. Ultimately, if that isn't successful during committee, there are other rules down the road to try to bring this bill to a hearing. There are procedural methods. Now, we don't prefer to do that because, you know, this is a very important topic that I got to tell you, Johnny, it didn't go away during the COVID years, and it's not going to go away in the future. This is incredibly important legislation that deals with balancing the powers of the governor, regardless of who the governor is. Don't take any of this personal to the existing governor. That's not its intent. Its intent is to look forward to say, what about all the other upcoming governors that we haven't even elected yet? Should not the power be balanced with the legislature?
How long did the governor have his emergency powers approximately? Do you recall?
Unfortunately, I do. The emergency was declared over on October 31st, yes, Halloween of 2022. Just shy, Johnny, just shy of 3 years of emergency mandates, powers, without legislative ability to provide oversight or to some, it pretty much to weigh in. So 3 years was a big enough lesson learned that I think alone should give some merit this year to say, look, this is still very important. Is, you know, are we looking forward to the next several years once an emergency happens? We know we'll have emergencies, but again, it's the proper balance, well, of power, political power.
Now, maybe you could set the record straight. I was under the assumption, and from what I heard from various outlets, that a lot of things were done, a lot of things were passed or pushed or approved that the governor wouldn't normally be able to do, but he did since he had those emergency powers, so like various pet projects and other things were kind of were done, and he wouldn't have been able to do that without emergency powers. Is that accurate, or am I mistaken?
That one I'm not very clear on. In other words, during the emergency, his emergency powers, the governor came out with what I call the lowest form of law possible, and he did that under his mandates. Mandates are the lowest form of law, and they're somewhat, of course, temporary. So there were a lot of things the governor handed out under his mandates, and yet to get something through the legislature during those times, that would be more of the ability for the governor to move on his agenda, his platformed agenda, to operate within a majority that is a clear majority. I am in the minority, and the House and the Senate is, of course, in majority control of the Democratic Party. And the governor, I believe, effectively used that majority, and there's nothing wrong with that. However, the problem is that a lot of this happened under what I will say, the cloak and cover of a pandemic. And it hurts me to say that because there was heavy influence, and it's the governor's job to do that. But this was done during an emergency when you, Johnny, weren't even allowed in the building.
Right.
This was done at a time that everything was remote on the computer only. There was no working out issues in the hallway or conversing face-to-face. We were closed for 2 years. This is my first time in 3 years I am face-to-face with people. And I think that that was a cover that was able to run a little too long on its course to really be more fair.
It's johnny@jodesha.com. We're tying up the phone right now, but you can still email or text any questions you may have for him. We have Senator Jeff Wilson on the phone with us. We're talking about the current session going on in Olympia right now. I appreciate you spending time with me this morning. I know you're busy with, working up there in Ole. Okay, police and crime, that's been a big thing, and it seems like a couple sessions ago, our police departments, our law enforcement, they were pretty much neutered from being able to catch criminals. Is there any work going on to help give them something back?
Absolutely, which giving something back would be reasonable and, of course, common sense legislation, and that's well underway. There are some bills out there that will address, of course, police pursuit. That's a good thing. There are bills out there that will address a lot to basically begin to reinforce the police interactions with us, with everybody. And that's a good thing because we did go too far. However, we still have some root causes that we need to look at what's going on in our wonderful state. We do know that the leading cause, I mean the leading cause of deaths in Washington State under the age of 60 is drug overdose. It's drugs. And this is a problem that the legislature helped in some way be a part of, in my opinion, by addressing what we call the Blake decision, the Shannon Blake case that was decided on personal possession of Schedule I drugs. And we now know that we must address this in order to increase a consequence for the use of Schedule I drugs. I'm not saying throw people in jail and that's their treatment. No. It's a way for law enforcement we need to correct that will intercept those that may need that assistance or that nudge to get into treatment, not asked, do you feel like going and will you, or you know, what's on your mind today. We're needing some serious reform to the Blake decision, which will actually defer people to treatment mandatory instead of three misdemeanors, which effectively have no consequence. And, Johnny, the scariest part about the Blake decision, if the legislature fails to provide its duty this year and correct that through legislation, then by July or so of 2023, there really becomes no consequence for Schedule I drug possession on a personal basis here in the state. In other words, it becomes somewhat of a free-for-all. And that is not good, because we know what the cause of deaths are in the state. And I'm going to tell you, it really comes down to the age-old adage, are we responsible enough to do our drugs? And the answer is, well, not when it comes to your health and life, because it's the leading cause of death now is an overdose.
Right. We keep hearing about all this money that's available for combating the drug epidemic, the fentanyl, the mental health issues. Where's all the money?
That is a great question. In fact, you've just triggered me to remind you that
Trigger warning.
Here it comes. Here comes the Homeless Service Provider Performance Action. And what I'm doing is I have a bill that does just that. It asks our communities and our legislature to somewhat follow that money. We intend this money to be used for good. We intend this money to help somebody, whether it be homeless, drug addiction, or a number of ways. And it's time that we begin to audit. Not pass judgment, but audit. Seek the balance of, well, where's our money going? Where's our performance standard? Where's our benchmarks that we're going to use in case we don't meet any performance standards or expectations? What do we do about it? Instead of, Johnny, continue to throw money at it. And I think that this is a long overdue. This bill that I am so excited about, of course, is Senate Bill 5224. And I have a hearing. I have a hearing on that very bill tomorrow at 1:30 in the Housing Committee. I'm looking forward to presenting that.
Well, good luck. Now, I hear that the Seattle-Tacoma-Bellevue metro area is ranked fifth in the nation for rising inflation. Now, a lot of people say that'll you know, head this way. Can you do anything about that?
Oh, absolutely. What we do, especially on my side in the minority, is we constantly drop legislation for what we call relief in a time when we can give you relief. And what I mean by that is we have still generous revenue income coming into the bank of the government. So we have money, and our direction is to provide some relief, whether it be property tax relief to our citizens. There are several bills out there. Whether we provide an incentive for, or not an incentive, but we take the burden off of seniors and allow them to have a little bit more income before they get their exemptions. Any form of relief in return has not been, I repeat, has not been successful the last couple years. But this year we try again to return something back to the homeowner, to the moms and dads, the families that need it. We do know that inflation, I just caution everybody, don't get too excited in thinking inflation is under control. If it was under control, you wouldn't have an expected 40 cents per gallon increase coming soon, and just with any day, any time, and the gas prices are creeping up, it'll easily go up 30, 40, 50 cents per gallon. There's really no stopping it due to previous legislation as costs get passed on from manufacturers onto us consumers here in the rural district. So, you know, our economy's not under control. If you don't believe me, then let's go egg shopping.
Right, right, indeed. So I hear the legislature may include that capital gains tax revenue in the state budget. Do you have an opinion on that?
Well, my opinion isn't the legal opinion. And the courts have ruled here in Washington State that the capital gains tax, and it's an income tax, they haven't ruled that yet, But what the courts ruled is they said, until we finish adjudicating whether this is in fact an income tax or not, you legislators can continue to count on, expect, and include the revenue from this until we work it out in the courts. I do not support that methodology because, again, it puts the cart well in front of the revenue horse, and it allows the legislature to get a little bit, well, cocky. We can start counting on this money. That hurts me because I really want the system. I'm a believer in the system, and I want the courts to do what they're charged to do and to hear this on the basis. Is this constitutional or not? Don't let us spend money if, in fact, that may not be the case. And we've long since thought, and so have the taxpayers, 11 times in this state have said no to a capital gains or, excuse me, an income tax. So I think that I don't think that that's a very something I'm supportive of, whatever. I would hope the courts would be able to do their jobs first completely before break off a little piece of go ahead and start using or planning on using that money.
Right. You know, we voted on, what, $30 car tabs how many times, and we still haven't gotten it, regardless of your opinion on whether it's going to hurt or help. It doesn't seem like we're getting what we want, Senator.
Yeah, but again, ultimately, we do believe that the courts are that final, you know, the balance of power on an equitable basis for all of us. They haven't got to the most important part of this, and this is the most important part of our legislative lives: Constitution, the state Constitution, and the federal Constitution. It's not a new document that just hit the shelves here recently. These are documents that guide us and need to guide us daily up here in Olympia. So I'm a little confused on the capital gains income tax. I'm dead set against it. And it doesn't just tax the rich. That's been media exploited, in my opinion,
right,
to cast some sympathy for something that, in fact, I'm going to still rest on that is not constitutional. And that should be a non-starter.
Boy, oh boy, I'm getting the blood's boiling, Senator. You know? Hey, if you have any questions for Senator Jeff Wilson, you can email or text message. I got a couple text messages. Can I shoot those over to you?
Absolutely.
Okay, text one. Any bills outlawing trans boys competing with girls' sports?
I have no knowledge of any of those to date in the Senate side going on, no.
Okay. Hey, Johnny, speaking of constitutional issues, what will your guests do to stop the clearly unconstitutional gun control bills and repeal the ones that have already become law?
There's absolutely a lot happening along those fronts. What we do is, it's hard to put a bill out that says respect the Second Amendment because we consider that a baseline. So you don't drop a bill for something that should be, in fact, respected. What we do is, it unfortunately puts us a little on the defensive side as legislators. In other words, we look to take these bills, these aggressive bills, to attack a Second Amendment right. And we offer up striker bills. We will offer up amendments. But ultimately, and I go out here to speak, that the entire 19th District delegation and I are lined up on this. And that is to stop with no votes, stop with strategy, and working throughout the system to make sure that these bills don't pass. You can't stop a bill being presented, and that's a fair and open process. Even if the bill is a bad bill, that makes us work even harder to put that bill down. And clearly, the governor has not been shy on what he expects on additional gun legislation. None of it makes any sense. It, just like the 10-clip magazine legislation that was passed last session, that doesn't make any sense. That's not going to keep each other more alive, in my opinion, or more safe. And that's ultimately what's disappointing, because with politicians and our laws, we look at sometimes catchy words and names. You use the word assault and you throw it with a gun, assault weapon, assault rifle. And Johnny, you and I both know there are other many forms that create harm, like assault knives, assault cars. How about assault fentanyl, the number one source of death under the age of 60 now in this state is drug and drug overdose. That alone will tell you we need to focus in on what's really hurting people. Quit counting bullets. We need to count fentanyl pills, and those need to be deeply legislated. So it's going to be a very challenging year on Second Amendment, but rest assured, I think we can not support any further restrictions at this time.
Okay, you said for fentanyl to be legislated, I hear from just sources that fentanyl's coming through our southern border. How do you legislate that?
Oh, absolutely. It's a bigger, you know, the entire drug scenario is not countywide, statewide. It's international, and it becomes very complex because we know that manufacturing in China and Mexico is dominant in the fentanyl scheme of things. And yet, we do know the southern border is really one of the biggest gateways to get that naughty substance into people's hands. And unfortunately, I'm a state legislator, but I often reach out to my federal delegation and say, hey, you need to do your part now. This is a team effort here. In the state, we'll do what we can do, but we do have to somewhat stay in our lane. And I am not a federal senator. I'm not a congressperson in Washington, D.C. If I were, then, of course, I get to give you a long speech of what I would do. But my issue is to make sure that I represent the 19th in the state of Washington and to tell the federal delegation what we think the hurt. We know that in King County, one of the leading causes of homeless death, it's not being cold, it's not being hungry, it's not being cared after or considered, it's fentanyl. We know that record deaths in King County and the homeless attributed to drug use and fentanyl. These are captain obvious things we need to do instead of casting off onto some other realm of discussion. It's okay to speak truthfully would be my motto.
So between senators and representatives, I've heard some criticisms like how you vote. You voted no on that, and it's something that doesn't necessarily represent your beliefs or, something that you've said, I'm against this, but then you voted for it. Can you explain why you would do something like that?
Absolutely. Our work in Olympia involves a lot of strategy. And if you don't want to use the word strategy, then rephrase that to planning. Every decision or decision-making process comes with a number of paths that can be considered to either end a bill, promote a bill, but don't forget that word compromise. There are a lot of times that you want to set yourself up for the ability to compromise. In other words, make a bad bill less bill, make a good bill better, or make a bad bill especially be less harmful. For example, recently we heard in State Government Elections Committee, which I rank on this year again, we heard a bill on advisory votes. And the bill basically says, let's get rid of advisory votes that you all see in your voters' pamphlet statements. Those are those right up on the front of the voters' pamphlet you get, and it'll tell you about should you repeal or affirm, say, a revenue vote that the legislature took. Okay. So this bill came through, and it wanted to get rid of this forever, advisory votes, and it was under the basis, too, it's confusing. So I certainly didn't vote yes for that. In committee, I voted without recommendation. I could have voted no. But I offer up to your listeners, Johnny, that advisory votes, they can be confusing. Absolutely. They may need some modification to be more understood, easier to read. And yet, killing the advisory votes and remove them is, to me, a political sin, because in 2007, the people of Washington brought advisory votes to the legislature through the form of initiative process. So I don't want to get rid of advisory votes unless the people get a chance to vote on that. Yet at the same time, I do think that it could be confusing and that it's hard to understand. So voting without recommendation is a strategy where I get a chance to represent the 19th and to offer some compromise language to try to keep the bill or advisory votes in the book and alive, but maybe make more sense of them. Maybe make them binding. Maybe make them matter more. And that's the strategy, rather than just say no and fold my arms, or say yes and put on a terrible bill, kick it down the road, or without rec, where I get a chance to readdress it and fix it again.
You know, some say that pertaining to, like, gun laws, that we have gun laws that we're just not enforcing, and there's no need to create all of these fluffed up, scary sounding thing, you know, assault rifles, when they can't define what an assault rifle is. But if we just enforce the laws that we have on the books already before this fiasco, that would have been much better.
Well, we're a country of laws, and in order to affect a lot of those laws, it requires police services. And we've seen some needed. I think that police reform, to some extent, is always going to be needed. Reform and review, of course it will. But we went too far. We really removed a lot of the value, and we did handcuff police with some bad legislation the past couple years, and we're seeing a result of it now. And, you know, we have to come back. It's hard to come back because the data is ugly. We see violent crimes, Johnny. Violent crimes at record high. We see 701 traffic fatalities from last year. That's the highest in two decades. We see a number of numbers now, and people are more than numbers, but we see all these numbers that clearly show we need to go back to do a little bit more policing. And it's obvious that the bad players, whether it be catalytic converters or pushing around fentanyl, we've created more loopholes for them forever, and then we handcuff those that we want to apprehend or to confront with our laws, the police. So I think that the police respectability is coming back. The problem is that economically, again, it doesn't pay always that much. And secondly, who at times would want to go to a job when immediately you may be considered a confrontationally bad to society versus the value that you provide to all of us, helping us make and feel safe?
Right. I got another text message, and it says, another beyond reproach Democrat proposal will restrict correction officers from using solitary confinement. A sick prisoner can lash out without warning and kill another prisoner or prison guard. Taking away a method of handling dangerous prisoners will only cause a shortage of guards. Your thoughts?
Well, solitary confinement to me can mean a couple things, and I don't want to wordplay on this, because when correctional officers' health and safety are at stake and the job becomes more dangerous, we should do what we can to make that job more safe. I mean, there's your first big answer. Secondly, total confinement is good at times, especially for restrictive purposes. But to get to the point where confinement that may be solitary is, say, done away with, no, I believe that that's a tool that if it needs correcting or modifying, sure. But at the same time, there does need to be a place for isolation, where that offender is all by themselves. Whether it's a holding cell, whether it's another thing, I'm not prescriptive on the treatment, Johnny, because I'm just not that versed professionally in it. But I can tell you that if I was a correctional officer, I would want some form of remedy for those that, well, get so far out of hand that they could hurt you or other inmates. You have to. You cannot get rid of that method or that style. So, you know, I see it as that. I have seen the legislation. I'm not sure if I'm prepared enough to answer a lot on the you know, the success stories of solitary confinement, whether it's been good or bad. But it is a topic this year. I have to do more research on it.
All right. One more text before our next break. Since Congress is obviously not going to act on any of Washington, Oregon, or California's bills to stay on daylight savings time, is there any bipartisan effort in the state legislature to keep us on standard time? Since that does not require congressional approval, it just requires the legislature and the governor.
Well, it does require federal approval. In other words, we could pass it, and I do believe, Johnny, I don't want to go out on that limb where I get into Senate trouble. I do believe that a lot of my friends across the aisle, I do believe it's bipartisan support to end the silly spring forward, fall back routine that we're into. The problem is if the state of Washington, of course, goes rogue on this, and I believe there's support for it, the federal government really, you still have to play within their system. If you don't believe me, we'll get into standard Pacific and Mountain and Eastern type time slots. We do have to have a system that conforms uniformly. Ultimately, I think, and I'm very much in favor of just keeping it, set it ahead in spring and leaving it alone. But you got to do it with federal buy-in. And that's a great question when you get your federal delegation or legislators on the phone, Johnny. I would go right after that one because I'm quite sure that Washington would support this. But again, why do the bill if we're just going to posture to get on a headline when the federal government is going to snub us?
Right. We have Senator Jeff Wilson on the horn with us. It was good to see you at the legislative send-off, or what was it, last week?
Absolutely. Yes, last week in Aberdeen at the Log Pavilion.
So, how are you going to help the homeless this session?
Well, I think the better question would be, how do you help the homeless and how do you help those that come with good intentions and that want to help the homeless? And that's us, the taxpayer. So I have a bill out. It is essentially known as it's Senate Bill 5224, and really does is it says, look at the hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars we throw or apply towards homelessness issues. And we have to be cautionary because I don't believe we're ever going to solve it. I believe we need to treat it, and I need to believe we need to get to the point where we can audit and control to measure success stories. We need success stories. And so my bill basically is an audit performance standards bill that says, look, those of you that develop all these government programs, which including the homeless housing requirements by the Department of Commerce to set out in order to get your money, you're going to have to start setting benchmarks for performance. You're going to have to meet some benchmarks of performance. And if you don't, that's all good. But then you're going to tell us what you're going to do to fix that. Because just we know for a fact that just simply throwing money out at an issue, really it just creates an industry. And we want a product. And in this case, the product that we want, Johnny, is we want to help people that want help. We need to help people that need help. And yet we need accountability for it. So my bill basically just shores up what the state auditor's office put out. They put out it's a big report, Johnny. It's 60 plus pages of recommendations on what we need to do with money that we so-called set aside for the homelessness issue. And effectively, we do need to make sure that the money is being used properly, and we have to also expect data to support that. So this bill also sets benchmarks for establishing data that we can collect as a legislature because we need to measure, is it working? Because right now, so much of it is just a hunch. Johnny, we're not supposed to work in Olympia under hunches.
Right.
We're supposed to work with intelligent results, and my bill will seek to get that. And that bill, of course, is also set for a hearing, and I'm proud to say that. I have over 11 bills that I've sponsored. Over half of them have hearings, and I've co-sponsored over 44 bills. And homelessness is something that the legislature must be more effective with and efficient. No more just giving money without asking questions for performance.
So some have recently said, "Oh, you're all on the same side. You're all criminals. My vote doesn't count because they don't trust the elections." What say you?
Absolutely. You know what? You can trust, you cannot trust, but you still need to vote. What I'm here to tell you is it is paramount to me, and I very much respect that this is a right to vote. It is not a privilege, it is a right. And I want people to know that the elections, we should strive to make sure that they're safe, they have integrity, and of course your vote matters. But let me tell you, all of this comes with voter responsibility, Johnny. In the last election, 65% or so people turned out. Well, then the question should be, where was the other 35% of people that didn't vote? Why didn't you vote? What's keeping you from voting? Is it because of your election insecurity that you would base on that you don't think it's valid? It is valid. Now, it always has room to improvement. I have a bill coming out to offer an identification, which is some form of a voter ID card to be put on an enhanced driver's license. I have elections reminders to go in bills that talk about it is against the law to cheat at elections. But what most importantly is that we do need to vote. I do get a little bit of my balloon popped when I hear people say it doesn't vote, my vote doesn't count, so I didn't vote. I have to remind everybody, your vote will count and can count. It's our job to make sure it gets to where it needs to be. But most importantly, where's the non-voters that are eligible and legal to vote? Not the illegal voter. We'll catch them. But where are all the legal voters, Johnny?
Right.
Please, please use that right. We're one of the very few countries in the world. And we're exclusive to having that right the way we do it. We'll fix a lot of the issues on voter rolls and mailing ballots to the same person twice. We can fix that, and we are working on that. But first, I ask people, do not give up the voting ship, ever.
Well, we got about four more minutes left with Senator Jeff Wilson. If you have any questions for him, it's johnny@jodesha.com. That's an email or text message. I have one here. Let's see. The citizens of Eastern Oregon want to join the state of Idaho and form a new larger state of Idaho. Can you propose a bill so Grace Harbor can join this new conservative state?
I do not have any plans to drop that legislation. I have heard of such. I'm more supportive of forming an Article 5 section of the United States Constitution, which represents states, where you get a total number of 38 states, and you can handle that more appropriately. Moving property lines at this point is incredibly, it is an uphill challenge. It's never that I'm not against it, it's just that I don't have any plans to legislate that. I don't think it's would be as successful. It may sound good, and it's an excellent way to, of course, raise again what we already know. We do know. I live in a rural community of the 19th, but I don't live east of the mountains. My colleagues in the east of the mountains, yeah, it's tough to have King County tell Eastern Washington what to do and how to do it. This is something that the best way to fight back, rather than try to take the legislation to move the property line, it's better off to win elections that would support your ideology and fight back that way. And Eastern Washingtonians need to be involved in everybody's elections to influence your vote. Don't just stay in your district. Take your opinion elsewhere and help get those elected that affront what you want. And the rural communities of Eastern Washington are being, let's just say, set times bullied by the western part or the King County area when it comes to green energy, water rights, land use rights. We see the attacks on our friends in Eastern Washington. And again, my job is to stick up for that as much as I can.
Right. You know, you don't hear anybody in King County volunteering to shut their rivers down that provide them their own electricity, just everybody else's, it seems like.
Absolutely. And, of course, We don't ever speak of the number two that's released into the Sally Sea, the septage releases and the uncontrolled releases of, you know, places where there are large people that mass together in these highly populated areas. We don't have those problems in rural Washington. And I will offer to all of the farmers and the producers of food in eastern Washington, thank you, because you put food on the shelves for everybody. And at times it's hard, because I do see there are times that people that will bite the hand that feeds them.
Senator, thanks for spending time with me today. I hope to talk to you in a couple weeks during the session here.